Welcome to We Are Chafees Looking Upstream, a conversational podcast of community, humanness, and well-being rooted in Chaffee County, Colorado. I'm Adam Williams. Today I'm talking with Carrie and Michael Fox, a married duo of musicians that you might recognize by the name Known Odyssey. Michael is a poet and video artist. Carrie is a writer, music therapist, and grief counselor. So clearly, they both are multi-talented and expressive people. Carrie published a newspaper article recently in which she shared reflections on grief, loss, and life. That's something that she and Michael know a lot about, rather intimately. Carrie was a music therapist for hospice patients for years, and she lost her dad to pancreatic cancer when she was 22 years old. Michael lost his mom to lung cancer when he was only 17. And for all intents and purposes, he never really had his dad around even before that. We talk about the anger Michael felt at that time and the alcohol abuse that ensued, and the games of Russian roulette when he was really in the pain of it all. We also talk about the revelatory life-changing moment when he recognized that he had more to give the world than his suffering. This is a really incredible conversation. It's one of healing and gratitude, resilience and forgiveness, at least as much as it is about facing grief and loss. Michael and Carrie exude joy and love and light. I'm sure you will hear it and probably feel it. The Looking Upstream podcast is supported by Chaffee County Public Health and the Chaffee Housing Authority. Show notes with links and a transcript plus contact information to connect with Carrie and Michael are available at wearechaffee.org. They told me that they would love to hear from you about this conversation or otherwise. You also can connect further with the podcast through We Are Chaffee Pod on Instagram. Thoughtful reviews of Looking Upstream on Spotify and Apple help us to spread the good that we're working for here by connecting the community through meaningful conversations. All right, Michael and Carrie Fox. Michael, you first came to Salida when you were 18, I understand. Mm-hmm. And I think as the story goes, you had $50 in your pocket, you lived at the Palace Hotel. And I'm always sort of curious about that kind of leap in life and what leads to it. Can you tell me about that story and how that came to be?
Wow, I love that. Thank you for reflecting. I'm going to go back in history. So originally when my mother passed away, I just turned 17. I was in the flow of life, just trying to find myself. And then all of a sudden, you know, I found myself in Denver with my sister, Brenda, and her husband, Daryl. They actually took me in when my mother passed. And some little revolves in life, it just took me down this crazy journey. I ended up meeting a really good friend named Ricky Sandman, and he took me in for a little while. And I was just finding called to the mountains, feeling really a pull to this area. And I remember just having a $50 bill. Actually, two 20s and a 10, or I can't remember exactly. And then showing up to Salida, I don't even think I had a vehicle. I don't even remember how I got here, but I remember just getting to the park. I looked at the hotel and I was like, wow, this place looks really cool. And the history back then too is just like, it's incredible. And as you know, if you're in Salida, if you've been here, since those days, like everything has shifted. And it's just, back to that, I looked at the hotel, I walked in, met with the lady there. Hey, do you have anything for rent? And they're like, sure, let's show you. And she showed me the room, and I was like, she goes, how about 50 a month? And I was like, okay. And that's all I had. That's all the money I had in the bank. And so from then on, I started looking and started working little jobs around Salida. One of them was the Bird's Eye Art Gallery with my friend Carl. And then I tried everything. I worked at Sharsh Manufacturing. What else? All kinds of just random things.
$50 a month is unbelievable. I mean, we're of comparable age. So to think about, like, this is within my adult lifetime, and I can't imagine paying $50 a month for anything.
To me, it was a lot of money at that time. But
well, if that's all you got in your pocket.
Yeah, that was it. Like, literally, I had maybe a quarter in my pocket. And I don't even remember how I ate for the first 2 weeks. Something just, I don't know. I really don't remember that, honestly.
You said, I don't remember how I got here. And in my head, I started laughing because I feel like that's probably what a lot of us could say in general for life. How did I get here? Like, how did I get to this point in life? How did I get, for me, it's how do I get my age?
I like that.
Like, what is going on? Like, in general, how did we get here?
Yeah.
I want to talk about your mom. Mm. Because let's not gloss over, you mentioned that your mom had died. You were only 18. That's a very significant experience. Mm-hmm. And I know that you were 17 when she died. She died from, was it lung cancer?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And your dad was not around. So this was an experience that bore an awful lot of weight for you. It's extraordinary, I think.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about that and tell me about her?
Yeah. You know, to reflect that time in my life, you know, my siblings were all, my brother and two sisters, they were all doing their life, you know, and kind of on their own journey, finding themselves. You know, I grew up with my mother and my father, like you just said, and to remind myself, you know, I didn't have him available in my lifetime. So as I was going through that process, I was living in Des Moines, Iowa, and my mother and I, we moved around a lot. I seemed to be the one child with her that would always tend to be connected with her. My other, you know, family members were, like I said, they were just out doing their journeys. To reflect back to the question, my mother was dating a fellow, his name was Bert, and just sort of, you know, just a friendship relationship. So I used to take the bus. I think I was just turning 17 in high school, 17. Yeah. So I would take the bus to the hospital and I would watch and I would see, and I was kind of, you know, trying to figure out, wow, what's really happening here? And I was really alone. I didn't have anybody with me. I didn't have any confidence to speak to. And so I was watching that process of my mother passing, and, you know, from one day seeing her happy and alive and sharing herself, and the next day not knowing who I am. And it was traumatic, totally.
When you say your siblings were doing their own thing, is it because they all were older and out of the house, or what else might have been going on then?
Yeah, I think the relationship with my sister Brenda and with my mother was an interesting one. I don't know the full story, but I know that they had their, you know, their differences. And so, you know, she was a strong person. My sister Brenda and I have, you know, we've connected in the last couple of years in a really good way, and we've really rekindled, you know, our friendship, and our family, you know, bond is really strong. My sister Carol and Randy, I truly don't know exactly what was happening in their lives at the time, because I was sort of, I think my sister Carol actually had found a boyfriend in another state and she was traveling away. So I was pretty much left with my mother and I to watch this, the history of her and the passing of her and that. And then right before my mother passed, she's like, she would call me Buddy. That was my family nickname. She's like, Buddy, I think it's time for you to go. And right when that happened, I think that was her way of saying, you know what, I need him to leave before I can pass. And I remember moving in with my sister somewhere in Denver, Inglewood or Lakewood, I can't remember. But, and then right when I arrived there, she ended up passing within a few weeks. So I think that helped her, knowing that I was in a safe place.
Did it help you? Did you feel that emotionally, that when you weren't there any longer for her or whatever else you might have felt, did you feel the gift, I guess, she was trying to give you in a positive way, rather than, but I should have been there, you know, some sort of guilt that might have come in?
Yeah, it could have been. I mean, she did her best. I mean, as you know, if you're growing up with a, you know, a single parent, you know, family, there's a lot in that, and a lot of your listeners and people will understand that. It's still, for me, it's like a lifelong, I'm still learning that. I'm still like looking back. I still, once a month, I think, you know, or every day I think about her, of course, but like, I'm still always trying to process how that assisted me, how that assisted her, what life changes came in between that, and from there. But I do remember when I did leave, once I found out she passed, I kind of had a deep breath of like almost of happiness for her, knowing like she's not in pain. The tumor on her chest was like the size of like a softball. Watching her not know who I am and just seeing that process was horrible at 17, and not having a father, not having a lot of people to talk to, really no friends. Like, I literally raised myself. And so that's sort of the journey that I've been on with her, with my mother.
I want to talk with you about your father and those things too. However, I do want to bring Carrie's voice into this conversation. And to me, it's so poignant that, Carrie, you also unfortunately had the experience of losing a parent when you were pretty young. Younger than what we expect.
Absolutely.
For that to happen. I think, was it your father passed mm-hmm. when you were 22?
I was 22, yes.
And was that anything expected? Was there a process involved in losing him, or was that one sudden? And
there was definitely a process. I would like to say, so my father, you know, and Michael and our backgrounds are so different. But, you know, the grief, there's still that, you know, it ties in there, you know, but just a whole different process. I mean, for me, I was raised in a very stable environment, loving parents, all my needs met, you know, go to college after you graduate high school and everything. So anyways, I was raised in such a nurturing environment that way. Unfortunately, my father passed away from pancreatic cancer. And so he was diagnosed my junior year of college. And so I got the news, you know, and with his process, doctors gave him like 4 to 6 months to live, but he beat the odds, and, you know, some experimental drugs worked for him. And his goal was to see me graduate, and he did, you know, and so he saw me graduate from college. But, you know, when he did pass away, as expected as it was, it still is just this heart, you know, just wrenching experience, because for me, my dad was like my whole world, you know, and you think that they're always going to be there. Like, and so when I got the diagnosis, like, we all were in shock. My whole family was in shock. My mom's like, oh, it's just a kidney stone. Don't worry. He'll be okay. Maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And then, you know, a few days later, it was like, whoa, like nobody was expecting it. And unfortunately, you know, yeah, he did. He passed away when I was 22. And now it's like 22 years later, this has been just a significant year for me, because this is the first year that it's like, wow, every day that goes by, I'm actually having my life, more years of my life without my dad than I did now, you know? So it's just like that whole process is just
different. It's not something I've experienced with my parents, mm-hmm. but I know that my parents experienced it with theirs.
Okay.
And the most recent family death that I can think of, and I don't even recall how many years, it's probably more than 10 maybe at this mm-hmm. point, was a grandmother who was a few days short of her 98th birthday.
Right.
And it still hit me like a gut punch when one of my brothers called me at work to tell me, and I left and went out to my car and then went on home. And I was too choked up to say anything to my people at work before mm-hmm. I left. I later sent a message from home because I couldn't talk. And this was someone who I, in my mind, was going to hit 100. Absolutely. Like, so my point is that when you lose it that early and when you are that young, I'm trying to reach into that feeling with you and with both of you. Mm. I think that grief and loss and death are subjects that we don't do enough of that with. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the really important reasons that I've wanted to have this conversation with you. As you know, Carrie, you got my attention with the newspaper article that you wrote that included reflections on grief mm-hmm. and loss in life. And that's not only because of your experience in your family and with your father, but because you have several years at least of experience as a music therapist in a hospice.
Right.
And that to me sounds like such a tremendous, a very human experience that so few of us have. So if we continue with you for now, Carrie, and just the connection here of grief and loss, and I really think what we're pointing at is resilience and joy and life coming from it, aren't we? I mean, because it's not, people can look at death and say, well, this is really heavy, I don't want to talk about it. But I think what we're talking about is your resilience to have carried on for 22 years and forward.
Wow, thank you. It's so true. I feel like, you know, you were asking, like, how did that, I'm going to tie into a lot of what you just said, because you were talking about, like, at 22, how that shaped, you know, the rest, because it's like, even at the beginning of this podcast, you're like, how did we get here? And I've been in that phase, like the past few months too, just like, how did I get to this point of my life? You know, especially and the biggest, and it's so hard, because in music therapy and therapy and counseling, you know, there's so many tools like reframing. You know, let's reframe how, because a lot of the goals in therapy is like, okay, we have this wound, we have this trauma, but the goal is to reframe it to a manageable place. And I feel like with loss, you know, losing my dad at 22, I've always been a deep thinker. I've always been so curious about life. I was one of those kids that would just sit in my apple tree and just like, you know, either read my books or talk to like an imaginary friend or just like ponder life's mysteries at like 7 years old. So I've always been that kind of individual. So then when my dad passed away, I'm like, all right, God, there's got to be like a reason, you know? I mean, of course, you know, because he was just the most amazing man, like this amazing, just light of the life of the party, you know, like just kids loved him. Everyone loved him. And it's just like, you know, there's so many songs like The Good Ones Die Young or whatever, you know, and it's just like, so trying to make sense of it. The year that my dad passed away, I moved to Denver, Colorado 4 months after. I got my first job as a music therapist. And so anyways, tying in that whole journey, it was just like, I'm like, I think because of his death, I found courage. I found the strength to just forge my own path, because living in Pittsburgh at the time, it just wasn't filling my soul. I wasn't like, I just was like, I need to leave to heal in a way, you know, being 22. And I had the support of my family. I remember my brother had just been in Boulder, Colorado, and was like, man, you'd really love Colorado. And I'm like, cool, let's go, you know, like, let's try it out. But it's interesting. In my 20s, because I worked for a private practice, then I started my own. And I was really drawn to children and adults with special needs, with developmental disabilities. Eventually, that's how I met Michael, but that'll probably come out later on in this talk. But hearing the word hospice, I just blacked out. And I remember we even had the first job I had, we had patients that like needed a music therapist, but luckily I was working with other, like, I was just like, there's no way I can do hospice. I'll never be able to do it. In my 20s, no way. And I did. I had some young kids that were on like a pediatric hospice waiver. For some reason, I could handle the children, but it was just like I had this own blockage that I just couldn't. And the reason I could handle having the children on my caseload is because, you know, they weren't at an imminent stage. It was just that they had this disability that was going to limit their life, you know. But long story short, eventually I found the strength, and it was after we had moved to Hawaii where I took just kind of a time out, let myself heal a little bit. And then it was just, I had just a calling like, okay, I'm ready to get into that. And you know,
okay. When you work in hospice, I imagine probably like an awful lot of people do, that you were around this weight of darkness and death, fear, all these sorts of emotions that we consider negative just endlessly, this stress, whatever. And I'm wondering how many people you're working with in that space and what it maybe really feels like if it's not all of that, because there's something that keeps you going back day after day, year after year. What is that that you're connecting with and feeling with all of these people, which I'm just assuming is, look, I just said it's been more than 10 years. I don't even know how many since the last death impacted my life. How many deaths might someone in hospice be working with, you know, on a constant basis? It's an amazing role that that person, a service they're playing in our serving in our world.
For me, what it was that was drawing me to it. Well, are you familiar with the wounded healer archetype, Carl Jung's? You know, there's something that has wounded us, or we've gone through a trauma or something, but because we can relate to it emotionally, empathically, that we're called to these careers, whether it's teaching or therapy or, you know, and for me, I think I wasn't ready in my 20s, but I was halfway through my 30s when I was like, you know, something just hit me, like I said, when we were in Hawaii, and I was just like, okay, you know, I'm really ready to get back into music therapy, but I don't want to work with kids again. I feel like that mission was complete. I say missions in quotation marks because this ties into your question. I felt like in a grounded reality sense that it was sort of a calling of mine or a mission of mine because it felt so sacred. There were so many times that I would connect with the patient, and it's that connection. It's the connection that brought me back because I am a deep thinker. I have a hard time with small talk. I have a hard time with surface stuff. Let's connect and let's get to the deep heart of what makes us human.
That's us here. That's why I like to do this podcast,
exactly.
Right? And that's why you're here with me.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And for me, that's, I remember, I don't know if it was, I heard a doctor talk about this, or it was always in our weekly meetings with, you know, the nurses, the CNAs, the doctors, you know, and for my part as a music therapist, I was the fun person. Like, I got to bring music. I got to bring, like, I'm not poking you. I'm not changing you. I'm not bathing you. Like, I just get to sit and we can talk because so many times family members have a hard time, or it's just so I was there for the patient. I was there for the family members. And there was just so many unique folks that we were able to see.
If I may interject also, originally, and back to your question, is the spark I saw in her, Adam, you know, when she was applying for this job, it was actually, she was doing a Zoom call with like six people to apply for this job in hospice in Las Vegas when we're living on Hawaii, two different worlds on so many levels. We were living near the ocean. And I remember having the spark of like, I need to do this. And I'm like, wow, this is so incredible, because I'd never heard, she'd mentioned it once and I had mentioned it, and she's like, no, I can't do that. And I remember when she got the job and we're moving from an island near the ocean to the middle of Las Vegas into a whole nother world. And then to watch her drastically change our life. I ended up after a year, ended up volunteering with the same company with her. But I just want to go back to that question, and it's really, okay, here I am. I'm gonna, and she dove into this job career like I'd never seen her, and I'll let her elaborate on the hundreds of miles per week, the hundreds of sessions, the stories from her working with people from the Black Panthers to they knew Frank Sinatra, and the stories really kept us there, and the history and the people and the heart, and it changed our life. Dramatically.
And in it, I found my own healing too. Because I've never been one to seek traditional therapy or counseling. Because at the time, like how I was handling my grief was, there's the stages of grief I'm sure you are familiar with, or listeners are familiar with. Denial, anger, depression, like bargaining, and then acceptance. And my 22-year-old self went straight from, I lost my dad, straight to the acceptance role. Like, you're telling me like you couldn't talk to people after you found out your grandma died? Like, within 5 to 10 minutes of my dad taking his last breath, I went into business mode and I was emailing like my friends, oh, my father just passed away, the funeral's gonna be, you know what I'm saying? And like, that was just my MO. Then I started my music therapy business in Denver, and then that's why we moved to Hawaii, is though, because I kind of hit a wall, like, because I didn't deal with my grief and everything. So then my process of when we ended up going to Vegas and I found like, wow, I can do this. And I'm like, I found such healing in it too. Like, so now I can, you know, be around a person in a hospital bed that's, you know, emaciated because of the dying process. And, you know, I can handle it and be there because so many humans need that. You know, I needed it when I didn't know I needed it. And so, yeah, but like Michael was saying, yeah, when he joined, in the sessions, like, he brought such a huge element to it. And I don't know if you found healing in it too.
No, as we're doing this podcast, it's actually amazing, Adam. And you know, when we're speaking, I'm having healing moments here of reflecting, and I'm so grateful right now. Thank you so much for allowing this space for us and for your listeners and for yourself. But it just, I just was thinking about our age, you know, and that that connection that, you know, losing your father and then my mother, is like, wow, I never really connected the dots of like, whoa, that's interesting that, you know, they say two birds of a feather flock together and they flow, but I never really connected those dots till actually right now. Like, wow, we really had so much more in common. Your life was a lot different. Like you had mentioned, you had, you know, you had a silver platter. I had a wooden cup, which, you know, so to reflect that, Thank you. I just had that epiphany. I was like, wow,
sometimes
that really helped.
Sometimes wooden cups are like nicer than silver platters too.
True.
But like, you know, anyways.
So I'm thinking about grief here, you know, in a bigger sense, because we experience this with so many kinds of loss. It's not just with the literal physical death of the body. It's in divorce. It's in how we might feel about something from the way we were parented, or, you know, the fact, again, Michael, your father wasn't there. You know, there's a sense of grief that I would imagine accompanied that. And maybe especially when you lost your mother, how did you handle that process, you know, anger and acceptance and all of that? Because as a young man, I would think, you know, that's a very challenging age for any of us when we are 17, 18-year-old boys. Your father has... Well, from what I understand, if I recall correctly from things you've shared publicly before, this was a man who truly was never around, never said I love you at any moment when he was with you, and tended to be drunk or drinking during those interactions as well. And I imagine there's a lot of cause there for anger, regardless of what happened with your mother. Then you put that on, and it's just, it's something I can't imagine.
Thank you. And, you know, I made some notes of that too. And I think I feel allowing myself to have this time with you and your amazing listeners and your connected communities all around the world, it really helped me dive deep, you know, into why, what, where, how all of that even began in my life. And one of the things I was, you know, when I first moved to Slide, I literally drowned myself in alcohol from 19 to about 23. And I don't remember a lot of my life, and I just remember the anger, and a lot of it was due to my father, and not so much my mom. She did the best she could, you know, and that's part of my poem. She did the best she could. Maybe I misunderstood, but yeah. So that, and that time was in Salida, and I truly, one awakening for me is one of my friends. He ended up passing away when he was 20 in Canyon City. He got hit by a van, actually, and he was my confidant, reminding me of Carrie, as if she, you know, if he was a female, very similar energy. But I remember one day his father looked at us and was like, "Michael, John, you guys look like, you look terrible." I won't say the word that he said. So I went home and looked in the mirror, and I was just like, I started crying. I'm just like, whoa, what am I doing to myself? Self, you know, the rage I felt, and you know, the times I found myself waking up with my car in the middle of the street on F Street, or like, you know, in ditches, and I, you know, playing Russian roulette.
For real?
Yeah, with black powder pistols. I mean, I literally, you know, downtown Salida, and, you know, I won't mention the exact place, but some of the things, you know, that I don't know truly how I survived it. And, you know, and I, without counseling, without support groups, I never confided in anyone. I never really truly had anybody that I felt safe with, especially with men, because I felt, you know, and that's one thing I connected with you, Adam, is I felt very comfortable to speak about it today, is because of the energy that you carry yourself, your tone, the way that you speak. Because it literally in the last 2 years, I finally have started to be able to be around men and to not feel fearful and like that loud. Like if somebody talks really loud, like it reminds me of my father, you know. And so,
do you have a fight or flight response in that kind of moment where you feel like you need to meet them in that, in what you perceive as a place of ego or aggression, or, you know, this alpha sort of energy?
You know, I always tended to be the people pleaser in that. And I always tended to just say, yes, sir. No, no, ma'am. You know, and I never really used my voice the way I do now. And I feel like literally in the last 6 months, with the help of Carrie, especially, you know, she's carried me through this, you know, tears and all, and the thousands of buckets I could fill, and anger, and seeing actually, she's watched me like almost, you know, abuse myself and punch myself and just be, you know how to release that anger from that fatherhood, you know, piece of my life. And I did, you know, I was thinking, I asked Carrie the other day, I'm like, Carrie, you know, doing this podcast with Adam, it's really making me think a lot. And I'm like, I'm trying to remember one, like, what's one really cool memory that I have with my dad in the times that I would see him? Because I would leave from Minnesota or Iowa and come to Kansas, actually. And one of the best memories I found was, like, we went to Ehrlich's together, but then I remember he was drunk. Or, you know, and I was like, I was so happy just to see him sitting on a bench, watching me ride the rides, you know, and knowing, like, he's not going to yell at me. Or driving the backwoods of Kansas down dirt roads at 14, being like, wow, my dad's letting me drive, but not really realizing it until later in my life, like, he really wanted me just to drive him to his friend's house while he's drinking. And so the story goes on and on, Adam. So,
yeah, yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. What I'm hearing here is a lot of loss for both of you has been experienced. And Carrie, for you through hospice, mm-hmm. there's a lot of learning from that, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. I am curious about the stories that people might share, like you mentioned the Black Panther who mm-hmm. you were with, or whatever the stories might have been, but also if we go into the deeper human places with those people, what you might have been witnessing in terms of how they faced this impending mm-hmm. end to this life. Did they have fear? Did they have a spiritual sort of peace? Did they have unresolved issues with family members? I imagine you saw a whole spectrum of all of it. And so then it's what did you, as this sensitive, lifelong thinker and feeler and communicator, what did you take that in and do with that in your own life?
Mm. The word that comes to me in that question is perspective. It, like, perspective is everything. And for me, it's helped me, like, wow, like, just being around people of all ages, different cultures, different races, different, like, everything. I came out of this 5.5 year long chapter in Las Vegas with just like a changed person, because, you know, Michael and I did a lot of traveling in our early years. We traveled to Costa Rica, Italy, you know, just Italy, India, everywhere. But then to be in Las Vegas, which is like a melting pot of culture, community, people, it's just like every day was just that adventure. And the thing with hospice, the hospice that I worked for, you know, it's so hard because I know your question wasn't about this part, but it's like I saw the business side of it too. And that's hard because we're talking about like human lives, and like everything was just like, you know, you have marketers as part of your hospice team, you have social worker, chaplain, myself, the music therapist, a volunteer coordinator, then you have your nurses and your CNAs. But it's like, it's constantly, because, you know, we want to be able to help people, we have to have patients. So it's like you would work with one person, walk them through their journey, they'd eventually pass away, then there's another person. So it's like it's this ongoing process. But as far as, you know, the people and the stories and all of that, it, for me, it was just a lesson on perspective and then connecting the dots too, because we were in Hawaii, where I learned so much about the Hawaiian culture and the music, especially mm-hmm. of Hawaii, and how music is so special to Hawaiian culture, and learning the Hawaii Aloha, learning and understanding what the Mauna Kea protest was all about. We weren't living there at the time, but that was in like 2019, I believe. I was still very deep in hospice. And I don't know if you're aware, but Las Vegas is considered the ninth island. A lot of people from Hawaii live in Las Vegas.
I did not know that. No.
Yeah, so there's a big Hawaiian culture, Samoan culture. So it's really interesting. Like, some of the first patients I had those roots. So because of my experience in Hawaii, I was able to bring that culture to them.
Isn't that wild? If we go back to the question of how did I get here?
Yes.
What are the pivotal moments in our lives that end up connecting later, and it's only in hindsight we can look back and be like, wow, mm-hmm. like how I could never have planned this. Right. And now here it is. And with reflection, we're like, well, my time in Hawaii
yes.
is making this difference as I transition into this hospice role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you remember that video that made it? It was like, we posted, it was sort of viral within my hospice community. Mm-hmm. But there's one story I had with a Samoan family, and he was considered like the chief of his family. He was also a very Christian man. So that he blended the Christian roots with his Samoan roots, was like this very big figure in his community. And I remember like this is how like music and culture, like there's the song called Just a Closer Walk with Thee. And I was playing it on the guitar, and he was like humming along with me literally like 3 days before he passed away. And I remember they knew that song in Samoan, in their language. So here I am playing the guitar, kind of singing the Christian words, but not singing them, you know, letting him kind of guide the way. And then one of my teammates was videotaping this, because we made it the most beautiful legacy project for them. But it was where I was able to at least play this song. They start singing along, and then he passed away with that within 3 days, and like that was the last time they heard his voice, you know. So there's moments like that where it's not even just the presence, but the music connecting, bridging the cultures. And then each patient to patient, like as the years went by, like there would be a patient I would see that I'd remember from 6 months ago from this other person. Oh, if they liked this music, they might like this music. And then I could connect the dots. And just for me, it just made me a more empathic person, able to be a better listener, just to hold space and just to.
And if I may interject too, because yes. I was an optional part of this as Absolutely. A volunteer with this company, but. Back to your question, the eclectic energy of different personalities from 29 years old to 101 years old. I saw Carrie as a friend, as a husband, as a coworker or whatever, and in a new way. And the way that she would respond, the way that she would just not way beyond the music, the way that she would interact with people. Literally, one time we were in a room with probably six family members of a person. A niece or nephew or somebody said, hey, can you play this song by Michael Jackson? You are not alone. Carrie starts playing the song. The individual passed away right then with all of the family in the room within his last breath with, you know, on a note of her guitar. And I remember beyond the music, the energy that Carrie was sharing, she had a big responsibility, Adam, to not just play a melody, but to actually be there for the family for months afterward and to have that connection with people. Yeah. We also did that with a police officer that was in her 30s in the same type of situation in a room with the whole family. And that energy, I remember sometimes looking at it and, you know, having to be strong and having to hold back tears and having to be that, you know, I was seeing Carrie as literally like this, you know, angel, you know, in these moments. And I don't know if you remember those, a lot of those moments, and then dealing with, you know, working with people that, one of Veronica, was it? There was an individual that she was telling us how she would, you know, be walking in the woods, and she was seeing, you know, people hung up in the trees. And yeah, exactly. That was my thought. I did a big gulp in my mind of like, wow. And then playing music with her, and then the healing energy from playing music from 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and then even sometimes even techno. Mm-hmm. It's just like the eclectic energy. It's mind-blowing, and we would need like 10 hours to tell you, you know.
It's remarkable what music can do, and to call back for any of us. Maybe it's our youth, our childhood, something with family, with church, with whatever the connections are that we make to those things. And what a beautiful sort of experience, but also maybe guide for these people in particular as they pass into whatever realm, you know, and their Absolutely. Physical life here is done. It also does that with all kinds of grief, doesn't it? If you feel like you're in a sad mood, you're depressed or whatever, maybe you put on something that's happy and you start dancing so you can feel better. Or maybe you put on a sad song because it helps you get it out in a different way. It's a really incredible thing. And so as we're talking about all this grief and loss, and that you two have so much experience with, what I feel is an undercurrent here is the joy of how you are working with it, and especially through music. You both are musicians. Creators in various forms, I think. Michael, I know you're also a poet. You both work with words and write. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the role of creativity and joy maybe it's as healing personally, but also in however you see it for others, because you do play and perform publicly and share publicly.
I really, truly love how you just expressed that, because my final note yesterday was called celebration of resiliency, celebration of that. And you just said that, you just took the words out of my mouth. And I was like, that's the best part of it, is knowing and going through the flame, the fire, your one desire. That's one of my poems, igniting the passion only we can inspire. From the time a leaf falls from a tree and lands on the earth, so much has transpired in those moments, and birth, death, life. And that's how I've kind of come to the poetry of my life, and assisted with Carrie. I mean, she's a master musician, beyond. I mean, she's a board certified music therapist, and being with her energy to assist me in my healing process, that's a big piece of how I healed a lot of my father's stuff and my mother. One poem that I wrote, I just spoke at an event by the Slight Esteem Plant not long ago. It's called The Vox, which means the voice, and allowing that. Just getting up in front of a lot of people, speaking a poem, you know, your heartbeat starts racing and you start thinking, and then you look back, and then luckily I recorded it, Adam and others, to be able to look back and be like, wow, okay, this is, I'm actually reaching another poem. It's called The Summit, that I wrote. Is I'm getting to that summit. I don't know if I'll ever reach it, but with the help of good people, meeting you, Adam, your wonderful listeners, which I've been able to hear some of your podcasts, the energy that you share, this company, and then of course having Carrie by my side, has, with the music, has been such the healing modality that I never knew how that would assist me, and it just continues to amaze me every day.
Absolutely. Well, and this guy, he's a creative genius in his own right. He's so good at complimenting and building up everyone, which is a huge gift of his. He's like the biggest cheerleader for the human spirit that I've ever met. Yet I also know it's hard to receive sometimes. And I want you to realize like what an amazing creative genius you are, because you've inspired me to like be a better musician. You know, like when I was in my younger years, it's like, I always just thought of myself as a music therapist and put myself in the music therapy box and just was like, oh, this is who I am. I never really believing in that creative artistry. And I feel like these past couple years, I've really allowed that artistry, which has contributed to my own healing. We didn't really get to the part of why we left Las Vegas. And for me, it was the pandemic really shifted my whole outlook on my career of music therapy, because music therapy was my biggest healer.
It's okay. You can feel the emotion.
Yeah.
And that's how passionate I was about that field. And when the pandemic hit, it changed everything. And I think I personally am still grieving the loss of this career that I knew that is still going on today, but it's just so different. You know, and I think being in our 40s, those of us in our 40s, like, have had maybe a different time pivoting from this, because it's like I've had 22 years, which is a long time, seeing the world as it was, being able to hold a patient's hand at the bedside, being able to have that connection. And what the pandemic, what I feel a lot of us lost was that human connection, because, you know, now we're paranoid of getting sick, you know, and I know it's 2024 and we're all kind of moving on. But in that regards, like as a music therapist in hospice, where I couldn't go see my patients, I was locked out of all the assisted living facilities because I wasn't an essential employee. And that was like only the nurses and CNAs could get in. And a lot of our patients within those first 6 months of the pandemic died prematurely because of that social isolation. There was so much of that. So what I'm getting at as far as this creativity, I mean, that's where I've really embraced my artistry, because I've been able to put that pain and be like, okay, well, right now I'm in this recreation mode of like wanting to get back in to doing music therapy, but it has to be like in this new realm that I'm still figuring out myself.
And back to the creativity part of it, you just have me thinking of a magical moment. We were on the news. Carrie's been in the news all over Las Vegas for music therapy. And one of the times during the pandemic, we're singing with people on microphones to a building full of people staring out the window to us. So we're singing to our patients outside on the street, news cameras, and we're just like singing to the windows. People are waving. It was magical, Adam, and that creativity. But now I think and who we are now with our music and we love all genres of music. She's an amazing classical pianist. She can play reggae, anything under the sun. But and back to the creativity piece, we're really truly, like, right now in our life, finding out who we are on the music. What mm-hmm. do we want to play to? How can we make a career of this? How can we really truly tune into what, you know, what genre? Well, yeah. We're in so many genres, but how do we you know, continue this mm-hmm. life in the creative world with doing it in a way that's, like, beneficial for you, the listener, and then also us, the performer, to where we can have a nice balance between, you know. And we actually just had a concert downtown in the historic district of mm-hmm. Salida, and in that, with our first album called One Voice, it just reminded me of Carrie and really truly and what you just said about learning your voice,
right?
You know, and overcoming the music therapy,
yeah,
in the hospice world at the end stage of that, you know, that 5 year,
yeah,
run.
And that concert on April 13th that we just gave, like, that was our first performance in 2 years, and, like, for me, I feel like that was for the first time in my life, like, my own music therapy, because I was able to share songs that I'd written that I'd never performed before, some with just some, like, just really sad themes, and it's just like, I feel like I just released that, and now we're ready to embrace, like, that celebration, like, that our resiliency, you know. Like, I'm like, I was telling Michael the other day, I'm like, I'm really sick of writing sad songs, like, I really want to start writing, like, exactly, some more cheerful songs, which I have, you know, but especially with my kids' songs. Go ahead.
Sorry. How do you connect all these reflections on grief and those things as mm-hmm. maybe fuel for the things that you're writing in poetry, Michael, for the songs that the two of you are writing and performing, mm-hmm. so that it comes out as something creative and joyful,
right?
This positive. I mean, how do you spend the time mining the grief and those moments for this stuff?
I have a reflection on that, if you're, unless you're ready.
I don't know.
I really love that question. and back to the poetry, the musical part of that, Adam, especially with the one poem I spoke about called The Vox. I'm when I write something like that, I'm not just thinking about myself. I'm thinking about others and why I'm writing this, you know, and how it can maybe help a kid that maybe lost, you know, maybe had a rough childhood. I think we all have our childhood stuff, and there's, you know, some people overcome it a little bit better. It took me a whole lifetime, and literally just until like a week ago, I still, you know, finding myself in Carrie's lap, just letting it all go in these tears. And, you know, it wasn't always that easy for me to let go of that emotion and to touch myself in a way is like, wow, do you love yourself? And that goes back to the music. That goes back to my poems. And long story short, I remember we were in Costa Rica. We used to go there every year, volunteer in schools. We'd knock on the door. We would and say, hey, we're coming back tomorrow for Musica, and we're going to play with the youth, because youth is a big part of our life with music, and we are starting to get back into that piece of ourselves. And I remember her and my friend that just passed away literally last month, one of my longest friends and my boss, my mentor, my teacher, she looked at us, and Carrie looked at me, and she says, Michael, you don't love yourself. And I was like, what? What do you mean? You don't love yourself. And I'm like, so I start crying in Costa Rica on the ground. And I finally had that awakening. And right then, Adam, I think that's when I started to write poetry and to really connect to that deeper part of myself to start that healing. So, you know, for you or others or Carrie or listeners or whoever, I mean, journaling, morning pages, and not running away from the pain that I felt truly helped me without, you know, I feel lucky to even be here today. Like, I don't know how I'm alive sometimes.
I've wondered how you have come to that place of love, and you use this music also in spiritual settings. I think there's a lot of spirituality in your perspective and how you go about life. And I'm curious how you came to this place, again, from really stuff that connects to your dad largely, but mm-hmm. then also when you lose your mother, and it's in that context of, haven't I taken enough? Like, why me? Why do I have to lose my mother too? Again, as a young man, I would have felt, I already felt, without that loss in my life, plenty of anger, plenty mm-hmm. of aggression, plenty of alcohol issues, all the stuff. And you've come to a place of love and all of this growth. And I mean, we could talk about crying too, as men. That is a massive obstacle for me, just like love is.
Wow, that's great. Thank you so much. And I just want to just reflect again, and I don't want to keep sounding, you know, repeating myself, but I'm so grateful today, Adam and Carrie, and to your amazing, you know, community that you've created here, to be able to have this moment to actually look into myself and then to keep learning and growing and disintegrating the place of knowing. Everything I say sometimes is a poem that I wrote, which helped me get to this part. But back to your question, as far as some of the notes I was writing to and feeling, was like, the things my father tried to instill in me as a child at 13, 14, 15 with racism, you know, in my youth, it confused me, Adam and others. It's just, I had no clue what these things meant. And I remember having to really search my soul deeply to be able to like find myself in this emotional place at, you know, 14, 15, 16, and your father's telling you, like, I won't mention these things that he said, but like really horrible things. And then I would look at the individual he's talking about, and I'm just like, wow. So part of, back to your question, is the thing that helped me is really, you know, my father doing those things actually helped me grow into being a better man. And it helped me look at people, and I would see individuals, and I would start to look at them as small children, and I would look for the best in people. I still do that today with, if somebody, you know, has a yells at you in traffic, or, which we don't have a lot of that here, thank God, in Salida, but like in the normal, when we were in Vegas, I started to be like, there was moments where I got so upset, or I'm in traffic, and I look at people and look in the car next to me, I'd be like, wow, I see you. I see a little kid in that little body, or in that big body, or the adult body. And so looking at the innocence in people, I figured that out on my own, and my dad sparked that. It's like, well, thanks, Dad. You know, you did a few things for me. You never said I love you once. You never respected me. I never was enough for you. I mean, I could go on, and you know, the verbal and mental abuse. Never do I remember being physically abused, but sometimes I actually would have loved that. I would have liked to be spanked. I would have liked to have that, you know, and I never had those. My mom used to whip me with a belt, and I used to love that belt because I knew that I'm getting attention. And I don't know how others would have handled that, but I turned that negative into a loving source of energy, and through Mother Nature, through Carrie, my best friend, and my wife, through her and healing and just taking a moment to listen. And if you can find, my best advice, Adam and whoever, is just having that one individual or that will listen to you and allow that healing to begin, even if they don't do anything. Mother Nature has been a big part of that. Our travels to India, being almost kidnapped. Like, we have so many wild stories, you know, of traveling all around the world, and in it, you know, I was finding myself and seeing other cultures and looking. When we're on the floor in India eating with a family in the size of this room, a 8x8, 10x10 room, and we're eating on the floor, food with them, and just feeling that love. Exactly. Love. So seeing other, definitely traveling is a big, big part of my healing. And sometimes I look back, I'm like, I don't know how we've traveled the world the way we have with the income that we had. And how did this happen? Well, it happened. And luckily, here we are today. And
it's a very important piece of our lives, I think, and in our household as well. I think travel is such an unbelievable opportunity to learn, to see and connect with things that go beyond the boundaries that have been imposed by wherever we were brought up, by whoever we were brought up by. I want to talk about relationships right now, though, because the two of you, clearly you have this bond. We started the conversation in referring to the loss of parents, but there's been so much more that you've shared here that clearly there's this connection through your own experiences, through music. And I've been thinking about something specific within relationships lately. My wife and I are just celebrating 21 years together. And I've thought about, had I met or decided, made a choice different in my life to be with somebody else, had she, how would that have impacted our lives? So I put that to you now. Oof. To think about,
right,
the maybe fateful, lucky, whatever, the meaning of the two of you coming together, mm-hmm, and how you've been able to help each other, whether that's healing from grief or as creators, and how you bring joy into the world.
I'll take this one, honey.
Yeah, because my only thought was the struggles that we went through in the beginning of our relationship to be able to get to where we are. There were a lot of different types of situations that we had to work through, as you know.
But what was the unifying force? The unifying force was definitely the spiritual path that you were talking about. So we were living in Denver at the time. So I met Michael when I moved to Denver. Luckily that year, the year that my dad passed away, he passed away in February of 2002. And I started a job that summer working for a music therapy, a private practice in Denver. And they were getting a new contract. And the contract was at an organization in Denver that provided services for individuals with special needs. Well, Michael just happened to be a counselor there. And I came in to do like a music therapy demonstration. So long story short, we met, but we were, you know, we just kind of knew each other. But I knew there was something special about that place. And then fast forward a few years later, he invited me to go on a camping trip, and I was going to bring another girlfriend of mine. Well, she couldn't go at the time, and we were just coworker friends. But we definitely experienced a lot of magic in the San Luis Valley together, a lot of just unique things that couldn't be explained, like synchronicities, coincidences, just a lot of unique stuff that we both share this spiritual perspective, or like the magic of nature. We both found healing like in the outdoors. And I feel like what we experienced together that night, you know, just kind of was just a unique situation that kind of bonded us, that I feel mm-hmm. like because of that trip, there's just higher forces guiding sometimes. And when you both share that perspective, it's like no matter what human stuff we're dealing with or little things, like there's that something that's bigger that's keeping you together. Do you know what I'm saying?
Almost that we were two little kids relearning ourselves, looking at each mm-hmm. other, and we were seeing this innocence in ourselves. Maybe we were feeling the pain too.
We never discussed the grief. That. Like, you know, like us talking about our grief and our loss of our parents, like, you know, I think a lot of times, like in our early years, like we just loved being together. We found healing in the traveling. Sometimes stuff would come up, or he knew, like, I think because I lost my dad, he had lost his parents. Like, we did have that shared thing, but we didn't talk about it a lot. Mm-hmm. I think it was just, yeah, but I think over the past few years, because we've really been doing some deep healing, that like, you know, the pandemic kind of brought up a lot of this stuff, you know, that like these past few years we've just been really going through it and really facing the deeper aspects now. So it's interesting.
Yeah, I love that. And back to where I was working as a counselor for 14 years, I worked with thousands of people, and it's still a big piece of my heart working with people with developmental disabilities, mm-hmm. with all abilities. I like to say I don't really look at people with disabilities, but that changed our life in so many ways, Adam. And I remember
we had that shared passion.
The first note of her guitar, I remember I was working, maybe I had 14 individuals I was working with that day, and I was like, we're in a basement, you know. For me, relearning myself through Mother Nature, and that's another story, but I remember the first note of her guitar, and I was like, wow. I looked, I was like, this girl is super cool. She's playing this music. I'm seeing the people I'm working with that never would react to anything the way that they reacted with music and with her, and I just had the spark for her, and we were friends for years. Mm-hmm. We're just friendships, you know, and it did. It took that one fateful, amazing camping trip to Valley View, Hot Springs, in the mountains there, and then like you just said, the San Luis Valley saved our life. I really feel like, and it connected us in ways, and as you know, you're drawn here and other people are drawn to Chaffee County, and that's what your podcast, and it's just like there's a magical healing feeling here.
It's hard to explain.
It's interesting because I'm writing a poetry book, and the first trip we took, we were following a gray bus, maybe a 62 old gray bus, and that's part of
what the poetry title.
It's called Behind the Gray Bus, you know, that I'm working on. But yeah,
and this kind of ties into what you're talking about, like with your wife and 21 years. It's like I feel like that was maybe destiny, you know. It's destiny that I came to Colorado, we met each other, we've been able to heal and then live a very, you know, just filled life of, you know, service, but just creativity and everything. And
Carrie, you said that you didn't mention the loss of your parents together initially,
mm-hmm.
but I suspect that that was a felt understanding, that there was something that you had safety with each other that you didn't necessarily feel with others. What do you think?
Well, I think you're right, because I think I remember that camping trip that my friend was supposed to go on, but she couldn't go on. And I remember that whole time, like, talking his ear off driving down 285.
Right? We're going on 16 years next month.
I think
month.
That's actually when I brought up my dad, probably. Like, because I think I was, because that summer, yeah. I remember, or this would have been in the year 2006, and I remember just that summer having a lot of just unexplained occurrences, like just that I needed, yeah, and I knew he could understand that.
That was part of the magic.
So that was part of it.
There's a shorthand to understanding each other when you can just say one simple thing,
right?
And the other person's like, I know that. I know those feelings. I've had that experience, right? So now you don't even have to say a whole lot to know that you both understand something that is what you thought was unique to you, but you find you have somebody you can bond with over it.
Yeah, absolutely. And working together with individuals with special needs was like a unique bond already, because we were really close, our other coworkers at that time. And so we had a lot of shared stuff that we'd probably already talked about already. But then, you know, that specific weekend and then going forward.
Michael, I want to ask you, this question keeps coming to my mind, so I'm going to circle us back to this. You came to this area, you know, as we started off this whole conversation, you're 18, you come to Salida, and then you talked about, you know, the anger and the alcohol through those early years when you were here. You're here under very different circumstances and in a very different life chapter, and with Carrie and with this sense of spirituality and with the music. And I wonder what it's like for you to come back to the same geographic place, but in such a different spiritual and emotional and mental space.
Wow. You know, to all the listeners out there, you got to meet Adam. He tunes in and he asks, you know, I didn't expect that, but it's funny because Carrie and I have just spoke about this all the time. She asked me all the time, how do you feel? It's a different energy. You're not who you used to be at that age. And, you know, you had some really weird experiences in Salida. You know, you're doing some crazy things in the places that, you know, she works part-time at Vital Living right on Main Street there. I do a lot of the music at Yoga Olas, you know, on Mondays and lots of other things. But, like, I walk by these areas, Adam, and I do gulp sometimes, like, whoa, that was where Benson's is, that's where I used to work. And I used to do wood carving with the fellow there. And that's where I, you know, played Russian roulette at, I think I was 20 then, maybe 21, going through it. And so, yeah, there's a lot of memories here that strike up lots of deep emotion. And some of them, you know, we would need another day to talk about. But then I look at the renewal piece with Carrie and seeing her eyes light up. She's from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Seeing her in the Colorado Rockies, the rivers, the mountains, you know, and all those things that we love about this area of Chaffee County and beyond. But there is deep emotion, honestly, and it's day by day. Some even today, and so for me, I'm almost relearning who I am and renewing my spirit of, like, seeing Salida in a whole new way, because a lot of my experiences here in that era, you know, it just weren't very positive. I never saw the river the way I see it now. I never saw the fresh mountain snow. I never felt the energy of just somebody, maybe this could be their last vacation, or, you know, and just seeing the happiness, the people on bikes, the dogs. I never noticed that when I was here, you know, in 19, 20, 21. So
I'd imagine it's gratitude that is part of that for you.
Deep gratitude. But to see Carrie, you know, she's my life's blood, and to see her happy and you know, to meet good people like yourself, and, you know, we're still learning it here. Mm-hmm. We're still meeting people. We don't, you know, we have a few friendships, but nothing too deep and connected. Really, Mother Nature is our guide here. And back to, that's part of my healing through, like we spoke about this whole time, is that whole piece of my healing is just finding myself and sometimes just being alone on a rock and just looking to the sky and be like, hey mom, hey dad, I forgive you, you know, and thank you. Thanks for the things you did do. Thanks for, you know, those moments that in my life with my, you know, I don't look back. I'm not angry at my father. I'm not angry at my mother. And if you ever listen to my poem, you'll understand it. And that's my healing part. But yeah, that's mm-hmm. that's huge. Thank you for asking that, because I just thought that an hour ago.
Well, I want to speak to your being so kind and generous in how you're describing me and what I bring to this. It's that I get to have the same experience with everyone who sits across from me. that I get to ask these questions out of curiosity that have been on my mind from my own experience. So for example, for you to be in this space where you have had some things that were coming from a darker place and more challenging and less healthy place, a couple of years ago, my family, now wife, two sons, we were in New Orleans. I had been there 20 years before under very different circumstances as a young man in my 20s going through my own challenges with myself and life and alcohol. Now, in my mid-40s at the time, I'm running on Bourbon Street at 6 in the morning, and I'm smelling the aftermath of the night before that 20 years before I would have been part of.
Right.
I had so much relief and gratitude to be on this side of it and to know that my wife and sons were staying at a nice Airbnb somewhere waiting for me to get back from my run, and I would have breakfast with them, and how much better my life is now than when I was out there doing that in those streets when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
That's the place I'm coming from when I ask that specific example, is that you're giving me an opportunity to reach into myself and learn something about myself because I have the opportunity to ask you questions. And that goes across everybody that I have on the podcast where we get into these deeper things. So this is of benefit to me at least as much as it is to anybody else.
Yeah.
Wow. That's so awesome that you mentioned Bourbon Street, and we've never been to that
part
of the world.
Not to New Orleans.
We've
yet,
been to India, but we haven't even been to Oregon. So we always joke about that. That's our June and John Carter. We actually do an act of that in our music, but that's sort of like our banter. But it's interesting. We just spoke about that the other day about Bourbon Street and like how that would have affected us being there in that energy. You know,
and this thought just came to me too, because I feel too like you almost had a transition period with Salida, because when we started dating, like we would come to Salida and he'd show me all the fun places he would like, you know. So I feel like back in like the 2000s, it's not like you're just going straight from like those memories back when you're 19, 20 to now, because we have had like in between times where we'd come and make new memories, or like the summer is like, so maybe that's helped too. I don't know. With just,
I mean, if I may just be totally, you know, transparent and honest, like the one moment in my life actually was at the Great Sand Dunes of Colorado. Yeah. Have you been?
Yeah.
I was, I don't even know how old I was, many moons ago, but I do remember I had my shirt off, no water, no shoes, just a pair of shorts on. I climbed to the highest dune. The winds, the sands are blowing. They were ripping at my skin. Part of another poem, yelling me to wake up over and over again. And that's my poem called The Summit. And I remember being on that mountain sand dune. Is the Great Sand Dune still a part of Chaffee County?
No, it's not. That's further south.
That's more Alamosa. Okay.
Yeah.
But I do remember, to make this, you know, I remember being on that mountaintop, Adam, and I thought I was going to die. I was dehydrated. The sun was felt like 1,000 degrees. I literally had sand in my eyes, and I just remember just like I was crying, just like, wow, there is so much more in life than I was thinking, my time, than the body, than my mind, than my traumas, than my all of those things. And that one experience was like my wake up call to like, whoa, what are you doing, man? You need to stop. You need to really look at yourself. You need to be a part of, help people, do something more than just feeling your own sadness. And so, yeah, the Great Sand Dunes was really my summit of the spark of everything that ever shifted in my life, spiritually, mentally, physically, friendship-wise, family-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Michael, you wrote in an Instagram post, this is quite some time ago, but I love it and I want to share it. I believe that people are inherently good inside. Sometimes the outside world shows us things that may break our hearts. And I think it's incredibly beautiful, and the forgiveness and the love you've come to for yourself and that you shine for others is such a remarkable path. And it could have gone a very different way, right? You could have held on. You would have had every right that so many take, right, to be angry and bitter, and to not allow yourself to openness with a relationship with Carrie, and all of these things to evolve. Carrie, do you have thoughts on what I just said there about Michael and about his comments of the good in people and in the world, despite sometimes getting hearts broken?
100%. Like, he blows my mind every day. Like, the kindness and the love that pours out of him, it's astounding at times. And there's times because I think as I'm growing older and I'm just learning more and seeing the world, like, I don't know, I feel like I'm becoming, I mean, I'm definitely a lover and I'm definitely believe in kindness and all of that, but I get very intellectual and I analyze, and it's like, what's so great about him is he can take me out of that mode, because I feel so many of us as human beings, we can get so caught on, you know, societal programs and what is acceptable to be in the human. And like, you know, I, for some reason, we're taught, like, for small children, dependent upon generations or ancestral stuff or this, that, or the other, we're taught not to express ourselves. We're taught not to be a certain way, that, you know, men behave this way or they don't cry or this, that, or the other. And he's been defying that since I met him. And he has opened my mind. Like, I am the way I am because of his heart, because of his kindness, because of his compassion with people of all walks of life. And I learn from him every day. So it's just...
And vice versa, Michael.
Yeah, it's such a kind thing. And I didn't think I would have it here today, but thank you both. That was just a beautiful thing. When people reflect that, I always reflect back. And it's been a really tough road for me to accept, you know, and I've always been a people pleaser, and I've always... You know, if somebody says a comment to me that's kind like that, like today, I actually just thank you for that. And
no, it's
I
true.
You know, I didn't expect that.
I don't know if I was
today,
as articulate as I should have.
No, it's
It was beautiful. Okay, it was beautiful.
And I see that. And like I said, you know, what I said earlier about seeing the best in people.
Yeah.
And seeing the small child in individuals. If I could give any advice, it would just be, you know, moments of rage or anger or anything. Mm-hmm. Just look at how would you feel if somebody handed you a newborn baby and the smell and the caressing and the energy of a baby in a whisper without the tears. Just imagine holding a baby. And that's how I usually like to see people. And that's how I feel with Carrie too, is like, she's cradled me as this energy throughout my whole life. And I owe her the world, you know, and she knows it. And we spoke about it. And especially knowing we were coming for this podcast, it really, you know, it tuned us in a new way. And it, actually this podcast has helped us become even closer, because we're bantering, we're talking, we're bringing up things. Holy Father, whoa, where were we? Why, mm-hmm. when, where here? So my reflection back to Carrie is like, she's one individual. And it's such a deep connection to say. It's like when you meet somebody, especially, you know, Adam, you're going on, what, 21 years, you just said?
Yeah. Yep.
To be able to reflect back a feeling of gratitude and love to somebody that literally would, you know, fly to India and bring me a cup of coffee in the morning, which she would do. It's such a strange feeling to really know that to be true. And I joked about this with her, you know, either this morning or last night. I was like, you know, if you're the one person, if I needed something and I'm in another country, you're going to figure out a way if I have to hitchhike there and get there, you know? And so the loving bond that Carrie goes, she's unbelievable. And, you know, we're going on 16 years, June 28th. And it's just like, these years go by fast, right? So I don't know how I would even, you know, keep continuing. I'm just babbling now about the love that she shares and the kindness and the music and, you know, her having a voice as, you know, a strong female in this world. I look up to her so much, and I want to protect that energy. And, you know, growing up, you know, just my mom, it's like I've always had this fascination with, you know, helping women on their path, whether it be just being a good man, you know, and just being there for people. And that's what Carrie has shown me.
Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you both for this. This has been a wonderful conversation. And Carrie, again, thank you for writing that newspaper article, which drew me to you for this conversation so we could elaborate, go much deeper, and share much more of who you are with the community. So thank you both.
Yes. Well, thank you. And thank you, Mountain Mail, for accepting my article, because that was just I think I told you the story how that all happened. But yeah, it was great. So thank you.
Yeah. And thank you, Adam, and Chaffee County, and all your, you know, the podcasts we listen to of you and the energy that you bring. It's just, we pray that the abundance and the continued energy that you share is just, you know, thrown at you in ways that you wouldn't expect on this journey, because it's a healing. What you're doing is more than just a podcast. You're bringing about a healing energy to, even if it's one person in your stream that hears that and connected to that energy. It's like, that's my whole life. If I can help one person, I feel like we've helped thousands on mm-hmm. the path, but one person truly is really makes the difference. So thank you for being that person in our lives. Because right now it's just you've assisted us, and we'll leave here today and just like probably sob later tonight and just be like, wow. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
Right.
You know, and how did you meet us, and how did you know about us, and how did you even care enough to, or anybody about us to even want to speak to us? So we really appreciate that. And we have deep, deep gratitude for you and your podcast and for who you are as a human being.
Yeah. Thank you.
Like you, Michael, I'm practicing receiving. I'm practicing accepting what, you know, those positives are that people shine towards me and the gifts they give and those things. So I will receive all of those generous words. Thank you. Thanks for listening to the We Are Chafee Looking Upstream podcast. If our conversation here today sparks curiosity for you, you can learn more in this episode's show notes at wearechafee.org. If you have comments or know someone in Chafee County, Colorado, who I should consider talking with on the podcast, you can email us at info@wearechafee.org. We invite you to rate and review the We Are Chafee Looking Upstream podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use with that functionality. We also invite you to tell others about the Looking Upstream podcast. Help us to keep growing community and connection through conversation. Once again, I'm Adam Williams, host, producer, and photographer. John Prey is engineer and producer. Thank you to KHIN 106.9 FM, our community radio partner in Salida, Colorado. To Heather Gorby for graphic and web design. To Andrea Carlstrom, director of Chafee County Public Health and Environment. And to Lisa Martin, community advocacy coordinator for the We Are Chafee Storytelling Initiative. The We Are Chafee Looking Upstream podcast is a collaboration with the Chafee County Department of Public Health and the Chafee Housing Authority, and it's supported by the Colorado Public Health and Environment Office of Health Disparities. You can learn more about the Looking Upstream podcast and related storytelling initiatives at wearechafee.org and on Instagram and Facebook at We Are Chafee. Lastly, until the next episode, as we say here at We Are Chafee, share stories, make change.